Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker. And now up on TSN 2, Brian Hazio, Doug Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Raptors game night tonight, back home against Memphis. They were down there last week, got past Memphis, big second half. And you've got Memphis in town for the only time tonight. So the Raptors are, you know, reeling a little bit. We know what happened a couple of nights ago against Boston, and they're 9-12. They're trying to keep pace, not with the higher-end teams in the East, but with the playoff teams. You know, you want to put yourself in a position. You're playing meaningful games, maybe sneak into a wild card game, and you know, this season of growth can be that much more beneficial in the end. But you got to win games like tonight. You know, you know how to dismantle Memphis. Memphis is a up-and-coming team, youthful team, not a great team though. This is one you got to get tonight. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. We've got Brad Lidge on all the craziness going on in baseball. Quiet today, though. Like, yesterday was nuts.
Yeah.
And now today, nothing's happening. And there's still a lot of – I mean, I shouldn't say that. Baez signed a long-term deal in Detroit. Couple of signings. But there's some big boys still out there and trying to figure out where everyone's going to land and where the Jays are all in on this. And I was thinking about this – you know, last night after we got off the air, we discussed a lot about what they managed to do, the Blue Jays. And I think, you know, Shapiro and Atkins, of all the work that they've put in here, turning this club around, I think putting them in a position to win, they've also effectively demolished this small market, we can't get into the big fish tank type of narrative when you consider what they've done in the last few off seasons. Hyunjin Ryu was a legit big arm to acquire. They went out there, gave him 4 years at $20 million per. George Springer was as big of a free agent as you're going to find. Like, he was, you know, maybe not Corey Seager-esque, but he was a big, big deal, and the Jays were the ones that convinced him to come up here. The Mets were in on him. Other teams were in on him. Apparently, you know, Houston was willing to kick tires on him. The Jays landed him. Gausman just had himself a great year. The Giants were in on him. The Mets were reportedly in on him. Other teams, New York, San Fran. What I'm driving at here is, like, the Jays, they're big game hunting, and they're landing guys, man. They're not coming out the day after saying, well, we really tried, but no one wanted to go through customs, or, you know, it was really difficult with our taxes up here, or, you know, because of COVID and all that kind of stuff. They're not dying on any of those swords, man. They're driving right through that narrative. And I think that needs to be adhered to. I think you need to pay attention to it. I think it needs to be respected.
I think it's a credit to the city, too. I mean, it hasn't really been the case with COVID over the last 2 years, Hayes, but Toronto's a hell of a place to spend a summer and play baseball, wouldn't you think? Regardless if you like the Rogers Center or you don't or whatever, the turf, it's just a great place to
– I agree, but that's been the case for 40 years. And you look at Anthopoulos, when he went big game hunting, it was – via trade for Donaldson, via trade for David Price, via trade for Tulowitzki. Yes, you signed Russell Martin, but you overpaid for him, and he was the Canadian guy coming home. You know, like this.
Man, did he give Russell Martin some cash?
Ooh, big cash.
Big cash. Like, huge cash. And it paid off the first few years. It paid off significantly. He was a big piece, a huge part of, you know, all the pitching success, them going to back-to-back ALCS. Russell Martin was right in the middle of all that. But, you know, Anthopoulos did his big game hunting via trade. And the Jays are not adverse to that either. I mean, Barrios was a massive deal that they went out there and got. And I think, you know, not only did the Jays have 91 wins, not only on their, I think, are on the verge of being a playoff team and hopefully perennial playoff team for the next 3 to 5 years, they're in the mix. You know, they're putting their chest out, man. They're signing Gausman. They're signing Springer. They're signing Ryu. They're trading for Barrios. I think it would be wise, going to give Vladdy one of these 10-year, $350 million deals.
Well, when is the pressure point on that Vladdy deal? Like, when do they – because they have him under control for a while, don't they?
Yeah, they do, another 4 or 5 years.
So why the hell would a team just all of a sudden say, I'm going to give you $300 million?
Same reason San Diego did.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, we don't want to mess with you. We want to make sure that it's not going to get to a point where – the arbitration years are, you know, you're paying a fortune anyway. And if you keep kicking it down the road, I think at this point they're going to wait until the new CBA. We're talking about a lockout within the next 24 hours, give or take. But I think what you're looking at is, let's say contracts keep going up and up and up, and there's no guarantee they will, but you sign them today to a 10-year deal at $350 million. Let's just say that's the number. So $35 million a year. What if you wait, and in 5 years you got to pay him $43 million a year, you know, because right. contracts keep going up, or $45 million a year? It may actually put you in a better financial position to give him the money now. You know, now you're gambling and you're forecasting, and we just talked about it with Jack Hughes and the Devils an hour ago. Gave him 8 years at $8 million. Vladdy's a way better player, way more effective player, way more productive player based on what Vladdy's done already.
I just want to know what makes the team all of a sudden just say, fine, we're going to give it to you, when they don't have to.
They don't have to.
Right. And no, what's the fallout from the player? I'm sure the player sooner or later will say, okay, I'm not showing up, because
I guess it's the nature of the beast in baseball now, how the tide has turned, where Tatis is getting his money, Acuna's getting his money. You know, it's just that Juan Soto's going to get his, I think, down in Washington. It's just a matter of time. Like, it's just, it's changed. And you don't have right. to. They don't have to. They could keep riding this out. That's why they are in the driver's seat. The Jays know Vladdy's a part of their operation for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. Question is, do you want to guarantee he's here throughout his whole prime? Do you want to make sure you don't mess with a player like this, not put him in a sour position where he's looking at other guys? You know, it's we don't have that answer. One right. way or the other.
Well, I would love to see them, like, not a news dump because you want to make a big deal about it, but just Vladdy deal out of nowhere. Because,
right.
you know, like you just mentioned, they're in there with the big boys, and they're competing. And even, you know, with Phillips, was it yesterday, where he was talking about how, you know, you walk away from Ray, like, leave it there and go, who's taking that deal? Like, we don't know the particulars of it, but it sounds to me like they dug in and were like, hey, we're fine with this other than
we'll
that.
We'll go get Gausman if we have
exactly.
to.
Exactly. Like, I just,
and they did.
I don't mind that. That's being strong management.
No, this front office, man, you talk about a change in reputation today compared to 3 or 4 years ago. I'm not sure we've ever seen anything like it in the city of Toronto. Yeah. Get more into that a little later in the hour. We were talking about the Tiger presser today. Tiger was back in the news, clearly, and one of the best podcasts in the game, the No Laying Up podcast. He is a host of it. He's been on the show before, and he joins us now. Here is Chris Solomon. What's happening, Chris?
Oh, just fending off all the Twitter warriors today. A lot of Tiger takes. Nothing says Tiger's back other than just a stressful day on my end. That says it maybe better than anything else I can say.
Why is it stressful? What were you tweeting that led to the reactions?
Well, all right. So Tiger Woods just had his third, I call it, major traffic incident of the last 12 years, the last two of which are very serious, I would venture to say. One, the most recent one being that he almost died, and he even admits in the press conference today that he had thoughts of amputating his leg. Yet there seems to be almost no conversation or no understanding by the general public or anyone about what happened in that car crash. I mean, we saw the videos that have surfaced from his DUI in 2017 were very alarming. We saw him on television the day before slurring his words and did not look good. And this accident happens, and we don't have any answers to it. And I was not totally surprised to see him kind of brush off the only semi-question he got in relation to it, and that there was no follow-up. But I just felt like, man, this is your first press conference, you know, coming back from a very, very, very serious injury. I think the golfing world and the sporting public in general wants to know what happened here, and there aren't any answers to that. He said the answers are in the police report, and that's just not true. So I was a little frustrated with that. Not unexpected, but I guess just a little frustrated with not only that happening, but the lack of reaction to that as well.
I agree. I mentioned that last week, and we don't have to spend too much more time on it, but it's like, as serious as that accident was, like, people want to know, where the hell were you and what the hell were you up to at that time of day? Like, it's just, that's kind of what people know, and I guess it's just the standard answer is going to be, it's in the police report, which is, I don't know.
Which is consistent kind of with the way he operates, though, right? Like, Tiger's right. not going to give you anything, and he didn't this morning. And I don't expect that to change between now and whenever we see him again.
Yeah. I mean, I think the questions are fair. You're going 87 miles an hour on a 45-mile-an-hour road and showed no signs of braking at any point. I think, like, I just don't know how many close calls he can have, but, you know, before – someone like it, I hope he has someone in his life that the, I hope he has someone in his life that is able to say these things to him and say like, dude, what is going on here? How have you not hired a driver? Why are you driving? That's not a, this is not a normal thing to happen. This is not, you know, somebody hit him or ran a red light or something like that. Like, this is the, I don't know, man. It's just alarm bells going off on my end still. And I think we, you know, it's fair to ask for some answers to these questions.
When do you think he plays golf again? Like an official tournament, when do you think it will be his first time teeing it up?
Man, he didn't sound like he was in a huge hurry to do it. He hinted at the Open Championship at St. Andrews being a possibility. He talked a lot about the fact he doesn't like back tee boxes right now. And that's, you know, with that right leg being as fragile as it is, the idea of putting a ton of weight on it, ton of stress on it, swinging hard at drivers, you know, hitting enough drivers on the range to get, you know, feel like he has his strength back and can trust it and compete with the best, you know, the longest drivers in the world all over again. Like, that feels really far away to me. Golf course like St. Andrews doesn't necessarily mean you need to wail on driver. I think that'd be an optimistic goal for this coming July. That'd be a very optimistic goal to see him back. I just don't see him coming back for PGA Tour golf courses that, you know, require a lot of, I mean, walking 72 holes is going to be a nightmare for him. It really is. Ben Hogan comp is probably the best one we're going to get. And I don't know. It honestly wouldn't surprise me. This is total speculation. Wouldn't surprise me if the PGA Tour revisited its cart rules. If Tiger is serious about making a comeback, I don't see how he's going to walk 72 holes plus practice rounds.
With Chris Solomon of the No Laying Up podcast, that's an interesting angle in terms of him picking and choosing. I assumed it was, I'm going to pick and choose the tournaments I love. You know, Torrey Pines, Bay Hill, show up at the Memorial, obviously the majors, and go from there. But are you suggesting it would be more about the landscape of the course that would allow him to compete? Do you think he'll be thinking about it from that depth?
I would think so as of right now, at least for the initial part of the comeback. I mean, I think he would need to be, you know, doing a lot of testing or, you know, kind of ease his way in to figure out what he's capable of doing, you know, over a week's period of time. And, the style of play that would be required, is his game going to be similar to how it has been in the past? You know, just thinking about it, flatter golf courses seem to be a more possible. I've never had compound fractures to my tibia and fibia, so I don't know exactly what he's going to be going through, but going up and down hills and kind of uneasy steps and things like that, that can't be good. And he mentioned, like, he was asked in the press conference today, are you in pain right now? He said, yeah, my back and my leg hurts. And it's like, the back is kind of the forgotten about thing. He was already out with a back injury and then had a very traumatic car accident. Like, he didn't really give us great updates as to what the status of his back is at this point, but that also has to be a concern. So if you can't tell, I'm bearish on him coming back and playing golf anytime soon, any meaningful golf anytime soon. He kind of lowered expectations on that as well. I think there is a chance we see him, you know, play with his son at the Father-Son Challenge here in a couple weeks. Just they're holding a spot for him in that tournament, and he can play from Charlie's drives. If he doesn't want to hit drivers, you know, just hit wedges, chips, and putt. He mentioned he'll take anybody on in a chipping and putting contest right now. So don't be shocked. I have no inside info on that. Just don't be shocked if he turns up here in a couple weeks to do that. But that's a true hit and giggle, and that's very, very, very different than going out and tipping it out on the PGA Tour.
Do you think some of his comments were nonsense? I know you were talking about not wanting to hit driver and moving up to different tees, but he was saying some of his tee balls were dropping out of the sky. And I'm pretty sure this guy could hit half a driver 300 yards. He can hit a 3-wood, 320, whatever it is. I just don't believe the idea that he's hitting a golf ball, watching it in the air, and it falling out of the sky at 220. Like, I don't believe that at all.
I don't know if he's even hitting drivers yet. I think he's probably referring to, you know, hitting a 9-iron or something and being used to seeing that thing carry 160, 162 yards, and it might only be going 148, 150 or something like that. You know, that shot does look different to somebody with that much spatial awareness and feel in his game. That probably, I do believe that, you know, he just can't put the same oomph into it, right? He just can't do the same kind of motion with his lower body at the ball. I do believe that it could go 10% less distance pretty easily if you're unable to rotate properly and, you know, really, really give it all he's got. I mean, he used to just wail on that thing. So That doesn't surprise me too much. Do I think some of his comments are kind of nonsense? Yeah, of course, they almost always are. But he usually says it with a grin and kind of gets away with it, if you will. But I can believe that, you know, that the ball maybe not flying as far as he's used to seeing it go.
With Chris Solomon of the No Laying Up podcast, chatting about Tiger Woods, speaking with the media today. Yeah, there's a couple of things that I always take with a grain of salt with Tiger. I'm hopeful, and I don't know if it's true, but it wouldn't surprise me, that he's trying to undersell and overdeliver. This idea that I'm done, I'm never going to compete again, you know, I'll show up, shake hands, kiss babies, hit a couple of drives. You know, I'm hopeful that he doesn't truly believe that in a year or two. I also believe he's one hell of a businessman, and I don't think he's wasting the announcement of a comeback at the Hero Challenge at the end of November. I think we're talking 2-3 minute, you know, I said earlier, Spielberg and Nike coming together to put together a video of this guy returning and new gear, TaylorMade involved. He's not wasting it, you know, on a presser down in the Bahamas. I think when it's announced, it's going to be the real deal, Holyfield, and it'll come through the website, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is. Do you picture the same type of announcement, whenever that happens to be, about what tournament he's about to play in for the first time?
Yeah, that's always been his thing, is, you know, the announcement of whether or not he's going to play comes pretty close to that starting date. You know, he doesn't say, oh, hey, I'm going to be back in 6 weeks. Like, that's my start. That's just not his style. Though he has made the Hero a place where he has made dramatic comebacks in the past. And I think it was, hope I have the years right, 16 and 17, he teed it up he was injured pretty shortly after that start in 16 and was back on the shelf and then came back again in 17. But I do think it's going to be a Friday before, like, here I am, I'm coming to play this tournament. I don't think we'll really see it coming. I just don't believe that. I think there is an element of underselling, over delivering, but I believe him when he's the sincerity in his face when he's like, this one's different. This is not a normal back surgery recovery, you know, an easy, you know, estimated timeline on this. This is like, I'm never going to be the same one, and I don't even know if I can make it all the way back to compete at this level. And that's very reasonable considering the severity of this accident and how he was talking today about almost having to amputate his leg. I can't see his 45-year-old, soon to be 46, already degenerating body, you know, handling all of that stress very well. I just think people should really, really, really manage their expectations. Remember when he had this accident 9-10 months ago, we all said, let's just be thankful that he can be a father to his kids. And that's where I'm at too. Like, at least he can walk, experience life in a way. He owes the game nothing more. If he never hits another shot in golf, I would not be upset about that at all. I hope a lot of golf fans feel the same way. I just, you know, this comeback would be the biggest miracle of all of them. And he's not really even hinting that he thinks it's majorly possible.
Check out the No Laying Up podcast. He is Chris Solomon. Great catching up with you, buddy. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Yeah, I think that's a totally reasonable, objective view. And maybe I'll admit I'm being selfish because I love seeing Tiger Woods play and I want to see him compete. And, you know, it's almost like you don't want to believe that maybe we're just never going to see this guy again, you know, and that is definitely a remote possibility at this point in terms of him playing and being competitive and being at the highest level. I want to believe this guy can get back.
I tell you what, the media is going to be informed. Like, do not ask about the car. Like,
he's not going to do interviews. Yeah. That's what it seems like, right? Like, it's over. Don't ask. Not telling. See you later.
That's it. Like, the police report is private. Sometimes in certain states,
dude, who knows what happened with that nonsense, Noodles? Because it's like the guy said, he was going 87 miles an hour in a 40 zone in some neighborhood at 6 a.m.
But that's what I mean. Do you think TMZ cares about, like, they care about breaking the story? Like, if they can get access to it, they will. And
I just don't know what. Maybe the police report doesn't have anything in it. You know, like, if he's just saying, I don't know. Who knows what he said? What kind of state he was in? I don't know. Yeah. But, it's, I don't know. That's the story for sure. But it's not going to be revealed by Tiger Woods.
Well, there's a lot of the story. And people are curious, right? It's like they just want to know. There's a lot of the story that I think people don't know. It's like 87 miles an hour in a 40. and you just no brakes applied, what the hell's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How are people not looking into that? It's just anybody else, they're getting the full grilling, and something was tucked away. I don't know what, but who knows?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, it's not what's coming from the horse's mouth.
What's the guy from Harvey Keitel from Pulp Fiction where he's the wolf? The wolf was called in.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction.
To come and
the
fix
cleaner.
It all.
Clean it all up.
Yeah, the cleaner. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, well, we'll see. I mean, who knows? Tiger at St. Andrews, that would be one hell of a story. Maybe Augusta's just not in the cards. I'm not – that's still 4 months away.
I'm not ruling it out.
I'm not ruling that out either. I mean, we'll see where he's at in 2 months, 3 months. Again, I didn't expect any pronouncement today anyway. That wasn't going to happen. When he makes the announcement, you know, it'll be – full-blown operation Hollywood. Here he is. He's back, and I'm going to give it a try, and we'll see what
happens.
Exactly. Brad Lidge will join us more on what the Jays have done throughout the offseason, what else they should be looking at, other news and notes throughout Major League Baseball, back into the NHL as well with Brad Marchand speaking today. Patrick Waugh is intrigued by the GM job. And, you know, Calgary with another win last night and an impressive win over Pittsburgh at home. So we'll get into that. More coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, bookseats.com, the trip of the week. Lots to look forward to. I would say Pats at Bills Monday night, Orchard Park. Really doesn't get much better than that. Unless you're looking for the heat and the old Hero World Challenge down in the Bahamas. That would be beautiful. Go see the best players in the world play golf. Bring your sticks with you. Tee it up. Hang out
in
the sun.
Is that this weekend?
Yeah, it's this weekend.
Wow.
We might have to
something.
Put a little on the line for that. I mean, it's a really, were there 20 players, top 20 players in the world, I think, or give or take?
I am all in on that. I mean, just bring me to the Bahamas, the golf tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Set up shop on a hole.
Oh, outstanding.
One of these days, we got to go on a trip.
Through bookseats.com. That's precisely what we're going to do. Maybe we get in on this Vegas sports package giveaway. You follow bookseats.com on Instagram, at bookseats.com, to enter the Las Vegas sports package giveaway. Bookseats.com, simplifying the way fans travel. We're talking football games, hockey games down there, best of both worlds, and you're in Vegas, right? The weather's going to be good.
We need to get involved on that. Like, we need to be involved with that.
Yes. Yeah, we do. I mean, the weather has hit here, right? Like, it's snowing. It was snowing all day again today.
I know. Tough.
Like it's go time. It's go time. It'll be December tomorrow. So, you know, we're into the March here. We've got 4 months of cold,
Death Valley, man.
Brutal,
it's
awful.
Brutal.
Yeah. That's our reality. It is.
We've had a good run, but I mean, it's getting gritty, put it that way.
Yep, and it's not going to turn, right? It's not like you can hope for all of a sudden it's going to be, you know, 15 and sunny for the next week.
I can always deal with it, but in the back of my head, I'm like, you can hand this over to me. Go ahead. Cold, like brutal, but come springtime, you better be dynamite right out of the gate.
I totally agree with that. If you're going to make me march through 4 months, make me. I mean, we're all free. We can live wherever we want.
Yeah.
I love it here. I'm Canadian, blah, blah, blah. But 4 months, okay. But I want to wake up on April 1st, and
it better be. And it's go time. The greens, I want to be perfect. I want it to be sunny and 15 every day.
Yep.
That's all I want.
That's all I'm looking for. That's all I'm looking for. And by that time, the Jays will be back in town, right? Once we get into early April, as long as they're playing. I mean, at this point, the lockout is a lock. It's going to happen. There's going to be a work stoppage. There's a battle going on between the owners and the players. All this money's being spent. It's crazy. Like, just crazy money being spent. All these long-term deals are getting locked in, and we don't even know if they're going to be playing baseball, what the new CBA is going to look like. Here is longtime MLB closer, one of our favorites. You can hear him on MLB Network Radio. Here is Brad Lidge. You're a lot more tapped in than we are, Brad. What's your read on this negotiation between the owners and the players and where it's going?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think you can interpret all these, you know, mega contracts and massive long-term deals in a couple ways. I mean, first of all, you know, the obvious on the surface, the players are, or at least were, nervous that they weren't going to get, you know, their typical free agent salaries and monies due to them in free agency. And so they look to sign early. They talk to their agents and said, listen, let's get stuff done before the likely work stoppage, you know, in December. And so a lot of them kind of, you know, let the teams know, hey, the agents were saying my player would be interested in signing early. And the teams, you would think, would then say, great, that's more leverage for us because, you know, if they're interested in signing early, then we can maybe give them something a little bit less and they'll do it. Ironically, we have not seen that whatsoever. It's like the teams have said, you know what, you know, after we saw the first couple of contracts pop, I mean, Justin Verlander getting a two-year $50 million deal at, you know, 38 years old coming off of Tommy John surgery. Once we started seeing some of those things, all of a sudden everyone just started, you know, jumping up in base pay and average annual revenue and, you know, length of term for contracts, which we've seen the Rangers just throwing them out there. 10-year contracts, you know, for Corey Seager, normally reserved for the Titans of the game. Not to say that Seager isn't a great player, but my point is that we're not seeing what you would expect, which is the ownership taking advantage of the players and giving them less. We're seeing, I think what we're seeing is that both the players and the owners recognize how good baseball is doing, recognize how much money they are making, you know, on both sides. And I think we're seeing that in these contracts, but we're also potentially seeing some confidence that if the players are doing this and the owners are willing to give them these contracts, then probably the owners feel like there won't be a work stoppage on the other side, you know, affecting spring training and actual ticket sales and stuff from games. So my guess is that this is probably overall a good sign. Yes, we're going to see a work stoppage, but man, I'll tell you, on our radio show, we keep having callers call in and say, you know, listen, I can't stand it. You know, everyone's doing so well. We see these contracts and they're stopping work. What's going on? But keep in mind, this isn't, you know, a strike. This isn't some kind of lockout. This is just, you know, there's a lot of important issues that need to be negotiated that have been put on the back burner. And now is the time for them to do that. So all this is, you know, both sides stepping back and saying, we've got to get a lot of these big issues tackled. This doesn't mean that it's going to impact when spring training starts. It doesn't mean it's going to impact when the season starts. It may, but it doesn't mean that right now, just if they're, you know, for a work stoppage right now.
Who do you expect to have a better career going forward, Robbie Ray or Kevin Gausman?
Well, that's a good question, because if the Blue Jays chose wrong on this one, it's going to come back to bite them.
Yeah.
I will say this. I think Robbie Ray kind of had a freakishly good season last year. I would be surprised if he's able to duplicate that, you know, in the coming years. It's not to say that he won't still be a great pitcher. It would just be a little bit surprising if he's able to repeat that kind of success. Now, that being said, I'm not sure Gausman can you know, duplicate what Robbie Ray did last year for Toronto. I think that fans probably should realize they're going to get a very high quality pitcher in Kevin Gausman, who's going to have a very solid season, but it's very unlikely he's going to be a top 7 or 8 Cy Young guy this coming season. He's going to be, you know, a top of the rotation guy, you know, and obviously when you've got Barrios there as well, you're feeling great about your 1-2 punch. But it is a little bit interesting for me, because I do think Robbie Ray's ceiling is definitely higher than Gausman's. But probably, in truth, the next couple seasons for both of them will be fairly equivalent, I would have to think. Again, Robbie Ray with maybe a little bit higher ceiling if everything does go right. But both of them, you know, front of the rotation guys. But I think, man, if I had to take one or the other right now, I'd probably lean toward the upside of Robbie Ray. But maybe the Jays internally saw something that they didn't think he'd be able to duplicate in 2022 and beyond.
I know there's big dollars at stake, Brad, but do you not find it somewhat surprising that Robbie Ray didn't stay in Toronto? He's a guy that's been up and down, and he found something that worked with Pete Walker in Toronto. And we're not talking about big dollars that were the difference between Seattle, Toronto. I don't know. I thought he would have stayed from what we saw in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I did too. And when you think about it, just being over $5 million, to me that doesn't make a ton of sense. I'm not exactly sure. Like I said, there must be something the Jays saw internally where they just felt like it would be very unlikely that he could repeat this last season going forward in the future. I don't necessarily know why that's the case. It looked like his stuff was just fantastic, and he finally was pounding the strike zone, which was just what was holding him back for so long in his career. He finally started attacking hitters and jumping ahead. He just had success in Toronto, so you know the ballpark's not going to affect him. I don't imagine the ballpark will affect Gausman, but you're coming from San Francisco, a pitcher's paradise, to, you know, I don't want to say a pitcher's nightmare, but a very tough place to pitch in Toronto. So there are some questions there as well for Gausman. But, Yeah, I am a little bit surprised, I guess, is the bottom line. I would think over, you know, $115 or $110 million, you know, $5 million is nothing to laugh at. But when it comes down to it, you know, that seems to be a very, very small detail for the Blue Jays to not have Robbie Ray back.
We're chatting with longtime MLB closer Brad Lidge. So Javi Baez signs a long-term deal in Detroit. Corey Seager signed a long-term deal in Texas. And the guy still standing there is Carlos Correa. Trevor Story still out there, but Correa is the guy who's more of a household name based on his history in Houston, his playoff success. I think he ends up in New York. I mean, the Yankees have been very quiet. The Sox have been quiet as well, but I don't think they'd be in on the running for Correa. Does that make sense to you, Brad? Like, would you be surprised at all if Carlos Correa ends up with the Yankees?
Yeah, I think that's probably the most likely spot. I mean, obviously Detroit, you know, was looking there, you know, and they got their man in Javi Baez. I think the Yankees are definitely looking hard at Trevor Story as well. And I think, you know, it's interesting with Trevor Story this last year with the Rockies, he did not have the type of season a lot of people were expecting. I think part of the problem is he just had nobody to hit around him in the lineup. And if you're pitching against the Rockies this past year, you're thinking, why am I going to pitch to that guy? Which makes him, you know, kind of go up there and try and do too much. And I think that's what we saw last year. It definitely hurt his free agency sticker value, so he's going to have to deal with that a little bit. But surely the Yankees, who have been so quiet in all this, surely they're going to end up with Correa or Story, I think. They've got the ability to land either one. Correa, obviously, with the proven postseason resume. And I think if you're the Yankees, are you really looking for anything else? I mean, that's all you want is somebody you know you can count on in the postseason. That's what they need. So if I'm them, I'm certainly leaning towards Correa. I'm guessing they are. But Story is somebody that they have liked for a long time as well. So I wouldn't surprise me terribly, but Correa just obviously way more proven at this point than Trevor Story.
We were talking about Scherzer yesterday, and it was like he would be sitting at his kitchen table telling his wife that the Mets offered him 130, and she asked over 8 or 9 years, and he responded with, no, 3. It's just, you literally cannot say no to that. Wanted to go to the Mets or not, he just must have been like, okay, I'll go.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, a lot of people just assumed he would stay on the West Coast. But in truth, you know, when a team's willing to flip that for you, right, I mean, are you going to be 45 when this is all over? No, it's just for the next 3 years. So you're right, that must have been an interesting discussion when he brought that back to his family to talk about. I can't imagine, you know, how they came up with this number. You know, people were talking about 3 years, 100. Then it was 3 years, 120. And I was like, you know, 40 million? He was tired last year. He couldn't even pitch in the postseason. He got so tired at the end of the season. You know, he's got tons of innings and tax on that arm. Not to say he won't stay in great shape, but I thought 3 years, 120 was crazy. When I heard 3 years, 130, I just couldn't believe it. And I think, you know, look, Steven Matz, you know, decided he didn't want to go back to the Mets. I think Steven Cohen, the owner there, was a little bit chapped by that, and he probably pivoted pretty quickly to Max Scherzer and said, fine, let's go get Max Scherzer, boys. Whatever it's going to take, go give it to him. And I think that's what we saw. And I think, you know, in some ways it has to remind people of Steinbrenner in those Yankee years where, you know, he would just, if he got chapped by one guy, he would go to a different direction and give even more money to somebody else. Steven Cohen's going to be very, very fun to watch. If you're a Mets fan, think about it this way. You essentially have George Steinbrenner, a guy who is going to be in that clubhouse, who's going to be talking to the players, who's going to probably demand really, really high results now that he's spent that much money, but he's willing to spend whatever it takes to win. You got to love it if you're a Mets fan.
Yeah, I mean, DeGrom and Scherzer, there's not going to be a better 1-2 punch. I mean, it's just not possible if they're both healthy. And the Mets are in a very good spot from that standpoint. I'm curious what's going to happen here with Clayton Kershaw as well. Where, you know, he needs a contract. I just assume he ends up back with the Dodgers. He feels like he's 43. He's actually 33. He's been around for so long. He's been such a prominent member of that staff. And there are other members of the staff that have blown past him in terms of expectation. He's a middle of the rotation, back into the rotation guy who probably isn't going to give you 33 starts a year anymore. But do you think it's a foregone conclusion he returns to the Dodgers, or do you think he might be intrigued by the idea of, you know, taking his talent somewhere else for the first time in his career?
Well, I think he's going to be intrigued by the idea. I think, you know, the Rangers certainly will make probably some kind of offer toward him. I'm not sure if that's the best move for the Rangers because, like you said, it's a little bit iffy if he's going to be able to get out there for, you know, even 25 starts a year at this point. It's funny. I mean, he could retire tomorrow, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he is only 33 years old. And I think if you're Clayton Kershaw and you're looking at what's going on with Verlander and Scherzer and some of the, you know, amount of money these guys are getting pitching into their late 30s, you got to be thinking to yourself, man, I'm only 33. If I can just go out there and have a healthy year or two, I could potentially get another very large contract in my mid-30s. And so, you know, all the incentive in the world for him to go out there and prove he's healthy. And it makes me think he might only end up signing a 1 or 2 year deal because I think he probably wants to show people he's healthy. I still think if that's the case, yeah, I think the Dodgers are very much in play. And if he's able to play for that 1 or 2 year contract, you know, look, I mean, he has had a lot of injuries. It doesn't necessarily mean he's not going to be able to be an effective starter. I still think he's kind of a 3 or 4 starter. I agree with you on that, but I think there's going to be, you know, stretches of the season, a month or two, where he can pitch like a 1. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's still a decent amount of upside with Clayton Kershaw, especially if you can get him on a 1 or 2 year deal where maybe he wants to prove he's healthy and then go back in. Because if he does prove he's healthy and he is still effective, he could get a much larger contract in a year or two.
Well, exactly. I mean, last year he gave them 22 starts. He had a 3.55 ERA. Like the guy, it's not like he ballooned to like a, you know, a 5.50 ERA or something like that. Like he's still more than capable. He's not a guy that's ever thrown 98, 99 anyway. So, yeah, if he stays healthy and he's still got that curveball and the deception and it gives you some innings, he's still got a ton of value. And we'll see how it all plays out. It's always great catching up with you, Brad. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this, buddy.
All right, guys. Keep paying attention to this exciting finish here before the work stoppage.
Yep, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun 24 hours. Thank you. There's Brad Lidge, longtime MLB closer, MLB Network radio host. Yeah, Clayton Kershaw, I'm looking at his numbers now. He's got a career 2.49 ERA, 2.49 ERA. Career. Like, this guy is just a machine, man. He had a run there, a 7-year run, starting in 2011. Won the Cy Young in 2011, second in 2012, won it in 2013, won it in 2014, third in 15, fifth in 16, second in 17. Like, that's a 7-year run where he was top 5 Cy Young every year, and he won it 3 times.
Wow, like, legend.
Just unbelievable legend. Yeah. Number and retired, first ballot Hall of Famer.
If I was a guy in Major League Baseball, Hazy, I would not be shy. And some guys tried to do it. Jamie and myself, we sat out a whole year. And it just looking back, it doesn't make sense, man. If somebody can stand up and say, look, we have to make this work, figure out a way. There's a lot of money at stake, but we all have a great job here. We have a great livelihood. Let's figure out a way to just be playing baseball at spring training on time. Let that be our goal.
Yeah.
I agree.
It is hard. I mean, because you look at the greater good. Like, I was involved in 2 work stoppages and a strike in 91. I got called up. I happened to be in Toronto at the time during the strike. Now, that was short-lived, but the other 2 work stoppages, half a season and a full season, you never get them back. You know, was I the recipient of good things that happened coming out of them? Absolutely. Salaries ballooned. You know, I was a guy who made more than I probably should at certain times, but ultimately, cooler heads have to prevail. You got to find somewhere in the middle to make this happen and move on. And you know, that's it. The NHLPA was able to do that. Now, the Olympics were a big part of it. It'll be interesting to see because I'm not 100% convinced they're going to the Olympics.
Every day that passes, it gets a little bit less likely, doesn't it?
Yeah, I told you a couple weeks ago, they ain't going, man. I'm telling you, they're not going to the Olympics.
I'm concerned
about it. But it might. It honestly, if it's for the greater good, then so be it. You know, like if maybe it's just one of those, hey, we were hopeful COVID would be in a different place. It's not. It's still here. It's still concerning. And if you pass on it, so be it. I mean, the league, they'll adjust the schedule. I don't know what they'll do with that 2 or 3 week gap that they were planning on for the Olympics because you're dealing with building availability, right? Like the buildings were probably being sold out for concerts, for other things. Well, the plan was that the NHL was going to be shut down. So what do you do with that 2.5, 3 weeks if you don't end up going to the Olympics? What are they going to do? I'm sure they have a plan B, but
yeah, you can condense the schedule a little bit and air it out a little bit. Like if you know and make the decision, I don't think it's going to be the day before they're supposed to go, they pull the plug. would probably make a decision a week or two before, given, you know, where the world is, they think, is heading. I mean, now you've got this other, was it Omicron and all of that, like, you know, that just never stops. But if they make that decision, you almost spread out the schedule, because there are some teams that are being taxed by the schedule. Like, if you take a look at it, it's compressed, and, you know, those players will welcome a little extra breathing room here or there, you know?
For sure, yeah. I mean, especially the ones that weren't going anyway.
Exactly. You know?
But the big boys, the ones that have the most power, loudest voices in the PA and throughout the league, they all want to go.
Yep.
So it's a delicate dance. I mean, there's no denying that. And I always thought, you know, good chance. I would still say, you know, 75% chance they're going. But by the end of the week, it might be 70%, if you ask me. And by 2 weeks from now, I might say 55%. Like, it seems like every day we're getting closer and closer to the idea that the league will say this just isn't logistically possible for us to shut down and make this work with COVID and going to the Olympics. And the terror that I think would come, maybe not terror, but the trepidation that would come with the idea of going over there as a player and testing positive, and what happens when you do that, you know?
No, like, kidding. That would scare the hell out of me.
It really would, man. Imagine quarantining in China for 3 weeks. No, thank
you. Wow. And there's a list of rules there. Like, this isn't, you know, we take for granted sometimes, you know, our freedom and things, you know, being able to do what we want. And, you know, you go into different countries that have different sets of rules, different outlooks. You're not messing around. Like,
no,
you know, it's you've got to be very serious about respecting, you know, the way that they want life to be lived over there, put it that way.
Yep, no, we absolutely, that's for sure. So we'll see. I mean, we'll continue to track the story, and the idea of still projecting the team I find entertaining and fun to do, but it may be a moot point in the end. And then you got to wait another 4 years. That's the nature of the beast with the Olympics. If you don't go here, you're talking 2026. And then you wonder, is it over? Sid will never play again. Ovi will never play again at the Olympics. You know, that's a legitimate reality I think you'd be facing. And not that you would make the decision based on those two guys in particular, but this is probably the last opportunity, or more than likely the last chance.
Right.
We'll come back and tee up the Raptor game again. They're at home against Memphis tonight. Some other games throughout the NHL and the NBA. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. So the Lakers are playing the Kings tonight. LeBron James will miss the game. He's in health and safety protocol. In other words, COVID. He's either tested positive or close contact or, you know, symptoms. And LeBron not playing tonight. So,
crazy, man. I wasn't expecting this. Like, vaccinations, I just didn't know. I didn't know. Well, I didn't know this was ahead of us, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's still here, man. We're at the end of the year. We're at the end of 2021. It's still right in our face. I mean, it's a different world today than it was a year ago, let alone a year and a half ago. But it's still a big part of the conversation. It's still the primary conversation in society right now.
And the fact that you're testing is one thing. You can be positive and be vaccinated and still be positive. Death rate is down. That's something that people always lose sight of, right? Like, that's the difference part. Like, if everyone's vaccinated, you don't test for it anymore. But I think, there's testing protocols, and there's teams that are fully vaccinated and are testing because the league has put that into place, and most of them are asymptomatic. But, you know, reading today, Bruce Cassidy has a few symptoms. Ottawa's coach, I'm drawing a blank, is Jack Capuano was very sick. You know, that's the thing. Like, for the most part, you hope that's all right. But for the people yelling, screaming about, you know, you can still test positive. You're seeing the death rates down, which is a big bonus.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that we can say that in our own backyard here. Hospitalizations way down, you know, deaths down compared to where it was in the first, you know, couple of waves, for sure. But I don't know. I mean, it's taken a year and a half away from us, and I don't know when it's going to come to an end. Who knows? And hopefully LeBron's fine and we'll just recover and be back in a week as if nothing happened here. But you know, it's LeBron James, and he's out tonight. against the Sacramento Kings. The Raptors are in action against Memphis tonight, a team they beat in Memphis last week. They're coming off of a loss where it got away from them, you know, pretty badly in the fourth quarter a couple of nights ago. And the Raptors are reeling here. They got to get some wins going. And this is a game you got to have. You got to beat Memphis at home if you want to stay, you know, with the pack in the East. So we'll see what they have in store tonight. The Leafs will be back in action tomorrow night with Colorado in town, so we'll tee that up a lot tomorrow and start looking ahead to the Thursday nighter. CFL playoffs this upcoming weekend as well. The Argos taking on the Tabbies. That's a big game here, clearly in the GTA in Southern Ontario. So we'll get to that later in the week as well. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at...
Hazy, everyone in Whitby hates you. 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.